it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let go. You're rolling with J&J, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Hopefully you're having a smooth one so far. On this September 11th edition, got a lot going on, both in news and sports. And I've got a lot going on, too. I hope you all will continue to... I mentioned that Les Smith is back from Belize, my father, longtime television reporter around here. He's in the hospital. And for those of you all that believe, prayer, you know, works, he could use them. So I start there. Obviously coming from a place of humility here. And if you don't know Les Smith, by all means, keep on moving with your life, because certainly there's a ton of things going on right now. Yesterday was crazy. This world, sometimes you just question. I mean, we school shooting, an assassination. And here I am thinking about, you know, what's going on in my family. I apologize for that. But like I said, a lot probably on all of our plates. But maybe you can, if you've got time, put up a little prayer for old Les Smith, if you can. Mm-hmm. Grateful to be here. Grateful to have my partner and brother here in John Martin. Grateful to have our great producer here. On the ones and twos, and Brad Carson. He's also number one program director in the country and in your hearts. Gentlemen, welcome.
Yeah, man. Definitely thoughts and prayers with Les Smith, man. No question about it. A legend that's been a part of this show and been a part of the Memphis community, you know, for so many years. We're thinking of him and
appreciate that.
We're hoping for the best. And, you know, like I've told you, my brother, you can take any time you need. We will hold it down. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes. No,
please
good.
Don't feel any guilt about that whatsoever.
Appreciate that.
Seconded.
Because, you know what I'm saying, at the end of the day, you know, you're dealing with a local and a national. And I can handle three. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
I mean, I wouldn't be that if
right.
I couldn't. You know
exactly.
What I'm saying? So, I don't know.
How capable you are, and I want you to know how appreciative I am of that.
And I mean it, too. I might force you to do it like Cal kicked whoever it was out. I said, if you're a first rounder, you got to go, man. You can't come back.
Oh, yeah.
You can't come back to Memphis if you're a first rounder.
Was that Darius, maybe?
Was it Darius?
Was Darius or was it? No, it was DeJuan.
DeJuan, yeah. That's
wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that sounds right. Like,
yeah.
You got to go.
So,
yeah, I mean, I we would be remiss if we didn't at least touch on, you know, yesterday for our country. I mean, obviously, the terrible tragedy in Utah with Charlie Kirk, and then the school shooting in Denver. I mean, that just kind of got swept under the rug. And I haven't necessarily followed up. Did anyone perish as a result of that?
Read last night, it was one. I've not checked in this morning.
Obviously, any death is one too many. And you know, we've gotten too used to this. We've gotten too desensitized to this. There's just no doubt about that. You know, the best thing that I feel like I can say, and I knew we were going to talk about it because you kind of have to talk about it because, you know, this kind of the world, that's the sandbox we play in, right? Charlie Kirk was not a policymaker. He was not a politician. He was not an elected official. He was a commentator. He was just basically a political commentator. And whether or not you disagreed with his message, political violence is just simply unacceptable. Because it only leads to more violence. It only leads to more senselessness. It only leads to more rage. It only leads to more anger. In the end, political violence usually has the opposite of the intended effect. And so I think any death like that one yesterday makes the United States a scarier place, a more dangerous place, and anything like it of its kind should be condoned to the absolute fullest. So, you know, I think of his family. I think of the people close to him. His kids were there. I mean, just unimaginable, really, what happened yesterday. So I pray for our country that we can somehow, and it feels like it's not possible, Jason, I'm going to be honest, but somehow, you know, have some diplomacy amongst us and continue to try to solve our problems through dialogue. And that's all I can really say. I can't really add much else, but really a sad day yesterday, no question about it.
Truly.
In the U.S. We're going to do our best here. It's also 9/11. I mean, my goodness. It's just really, really heavy right now in the United States. We're going to do our best here to...
Yes, we will push on like we, well, like we, like is our jobs, but like we always do.
Not that we're...
And roll up our sleeves.
Not that we're intentionally trying to avoid the goings on, right? It's not really about that, but it's like, you know, we got to go, we got to get through the day. You know, I mean, that's the bottom line. We can sit here and we can talk about, you know, all the issues that we want, but we got to get through the day and we got to try to, you know, entertain and escape ourselves, yeah. Right? So this is just as much for us as it is for our audience, man. So we're going to do that today here on the show. Stephen Ruiz is going to join us from The Ringer, and we will talk to him about the NFL. I think I caught up with him while you were out 1 week, so this will be your first conversation. I think you're really going to like him. You know, my goal is to continue to try to find these new NFL guests to replace the great Adam Chernoff, who has taken a backseat in the media. I think we're one for one right now with Ed Fang.
Love Dr. Fang.
I think we're going to go two for two with Stephen Ruiz from The Ringer.
Okay.
Now,
I trust you. Most
of what he does is quarterback rankings, right? So he's a quarterback's guy, which is perfect because, you know, I think you have a great, you know, question in terms of where yours happens to rank.
Well, probably a bevy of questions.
Yes. So
about mine and whether he can move up or will it just be down?
And if and how much sort of weight the dry fit has on that ranking, you know, if you just remove that, is it worth two spots?
I mean, I won't waste his time on that one, but I do want to know if this can be, if you can, as I put it, exercise the bad play demons in Caleb for four quarters. We saw it for a couple. And then he reverted back.
Yes, exactly.
Interested to see what he thinks.
So we'll talk to him about that. Thursday Night Football tonight. Jane Daniels taking on Jordan Love.
Yes.
So we will get his thoughts on that matchup at 11:25. Looking forward to that. Then at 1:25, Frank Bonner is going to join us from the Daily Memphian. Memphis Football taking on Troy on Saturday morning, 11 a.m. And, of course, you know, they win that. They're 3-0 heading into the Arkansas game. So we'll get his thoughts on just, you know, how Memphis matches up with Troy. You know, the kickoff time was set.
Strength of the American. This year.
American strength, no doubt about that. So that is the show today. But without further ado, let's do a little thing, Brad, that we call over-under.
Well said, gentlemen. We get to sports now, and the Green Bay Packers host the Washington Commanders tonight. Jaden Daniels, looking forward to that. Our line number we've set here, -3.5.
Is it 3.5 still today?
That's what I saw on ESPN this morning.
Gotcha. So
it could have moved from there.
Yeah, you know, I imagine it. My guess would be 3.5 even money for the Packers, +3.5, -120. You're going to find -3, -120, +3, +100. Okay. So basically the same number, right? Basically when you take the juice into the account. So we can call it 3.5 plus even money. You know, I'm not really sure why I would pass up on getting 3.5 with Jaden Daniels. It's kind of where I start. That's where I start. I know that the Packers looked great against the Lions in that divisional opener. And you know, Micah is you know, looks to be the dominant player that he was you know, in Dallas. But with that being said, you know, are we really sure that the Commanders aren't as good as they were a year ago? I mean, they add Debo Samuel, who looks fantastic in the opener there. Mm-hmm. They don't really have any injuries to speak of. And why not ride the lightning bolt that is Jaden Daniels? As you know, I mean, I know it was the Giants, but they handled them. You know, they handled them in week one, 21-6. So I think I would just take the points here. Jaden Daniels was 19-30 for 233 and a touchdown against the Giants. You know, ran the ball 11 times, 68 yards. Kind of looks like the same guy we saw in the playoffs last year. I realize they're on the road. I realize the Packers look dominant, but short week. I'll take the points here with the Commanders and Jaden Daniels.
It's probably smart. I'm just going to go on the other side just because I believe in that Green Bay team. You're having to go to Green Bay tonight to Lambeau.
Yep.
You know, this is a... obviously a Washington team that's not intimidated by anything, and Jaden showed us that his rookie year going all the way to an NFC championship game. That said, I think Green Bay has lifted itself with that Micah Parsons trade, but also in terms of belief and the level they feel like they're on. I just think you get that kind of performance. Listen, I think Jaden's fully capable, and that Washington team is fully capable of being better. Maybe not. You know, whether it's record or not, of being better than last year, because you have the experience of last year and all of that. So inevitably you'll be better, even if the record's a little less. But I think this Green Bay team may just be the best team in the NFC. I think Micah Parsons, now having played a week on limited snaps, now you get more. So you'll have that. You'll have him running, you know, a little bit more in terms of all over the field. Now, all of a sudden, as an offense coordinator, if you're Cliff Kingsbury, he is potentially a problem. He's more in shape already. So I'm just going to go Green Bay's favorite here, 3.5. I'll go over, say they cover, believing that Green Bay is truly that team in the NFC. Right now, I can't make too strong a case that there is anybody better. Certainly not Detroit, who they just handled.
No, yeah,
They just absolutely handled them. Vikings, no.
No.
And nothing in the NFC West.
You would give the Eagles, I guess, the better.
The Eagles right now would be the best. The Eagles right now, yes. You're right. Excuse me. Eagles still, for now, number one. Yeah. Packers right now, number two.
Yeah.
Detroit having been pushed down. Thank you.
I think that would be, you know.
They proved that.
My power rankings would be Eagles, Packers, Vikings. 49ers might have been in that discussion, but they're so banged up now that you have to, I think, drop them. I think, where do the Buccaneers come in? You know, are you a Bucs guy or not? I mean, that kind of, you know, Rams, mm-hmm. you know, that's kind of what you're talking about. That's probably your five there. We can argue about the order, but.
1-2, Philly, Green Bay.
That we know for sure.
Washington could be up in there.
They could, I mean, look.
That's your case.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have a chance tonight to sort of show, like, are they in that mix again?
Yeah.
Or was it just Jaden Daniels going on a heater last year?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, tonight we'll find out. So, it's a step up in competition, no question about it. You're going from the Giants to the Packers on the road in Lambeau. It's a fun Thursday night game.
Big time.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a good one as these go. So, we're on opposite side. I'm going to take Jaden Daniels. Jason is going with the Packers at the house. Yeah. Should be a fun one.
Hate to root for the Cheeseheads, but they're going to roll.
Terrific benefit for St. Jude that Memphis and Arkansas put together here. It was on October 27th, if you want to purchase tickets. 5:30 at FedEx Forum. Of course, the ladies playing Vandy. It'll be on ESPNU. Proceeds benefit St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. And we go to the over-under here of 10,000 tickets sold for the St. Jude exhibition. Prices look high as you know what. Are we at 10,000 over-under?
So, I have not seen the ticket prices yet. I know last they were like 200 ish for lower bowl. Cause I ended up, maybe it was 100 ish for lower bowl last year. Cause I ended up buying a pair.
Check your group text. I think there's a post about them.
Yeah. Lower bowl 108.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Upper bowl, 35, middle 71 ish.
Oh, got you.
What are you looking at? Okay. Brad's looking at something different.
Ticketmaster.
Gotcha.
This is the Liberty Bowl.
Is it?
Yeah, that's the Liberty. That's for
I apologize
Arkansas.
For saying
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
then.
Yeah. That's the Arkansas football situation. Yeah. So
also super high, by the way.
Those are high.
No, but both games are going up. Yeah.
So what did
Give
you
me
have
the
on
prices
Ticketmaster?
Again from Ticketmaster?
So Ticketmaster for the FedEx charity game on the 27th of basketball game, 108 low, middle 72, upper deck 33. Lower though is it 108?
Yeah. You know,
are we going to go above or under? 10,000.
That's about what it was last year, to my recollection, about $100. I don't remember what the attendance was last year, but my guess is with Arkansas being in a little bit closer proximity with Cal's return, 10,000. I gotta believe we're gonna. Go
I think 10, you could 000. Juice it up a lot. Not, I realize they probably can't pin anybody down. Maybe they can't do that, but you could juice it up a lot just in terms of promoting the players that you know will be here, and if you could get some of those elite level ones from that 07-08 team, I think you lock in. You know, just the chance that, oh, yes, on a Monday night, I'll head down. I'll pay those prices even for a family of four, whatever else. I just think that would help. That's the goal, to go over 10. Sounds like, you know, were they around that underneath, a little bit underneath that last year? So, I mean, with the storylines with Cal back, if you've hopefully got, again, with all, you know, it'd be great to have some of that 07-08 guys. I think if you do, you guarantee yourself more ticket sales. Announcing that beforehand might be a good idea.
Oh, I agree.
You can nail any of it down. It can only help you. I don't think it hurts you at all. Again, making sure that you've got them first. But yes, over 10, it'll go over 10,000.
Let's go. Let's get it, man. If that goes over 10,000, they can announce it. Whatever. I'm not saying it has to be a sellout, but just show people, hey, we can get over that mark again.
Well, there'll be several that come from Arkansas. So a couple, at least a couple thousand, even on a Monday night.
Yeah, absolutely.
Events in Memphis, we go to the number of minutes you'll watch iShowSpeed, who is a huge streamer who's in town as part of his tour across America. Minutes watched, 0.5.
This was brought to my attention this morning by one of our loyal listeners, and I'm very much appreciative because otherwise I would not have known that his tour is here. Are you familiar with iShowSpeed? You're the one that always schools us on streaming and how it's taking over the world. Will you explain to our listeners, folks like me, how big iShowSpeed is?
I mean, he's probably like if Kai Cenat is 1A, he's probably 1B.
I saw he got Streamer of the Year in 24 from someone, so he is of the... He is of the biggest of the big, the guys that John was literally just talking about yesterday.
So you schooled me on this. I had no idea that he was coming to Memphis.
Yes, I know. We had a dime. He was apparently in Nashville yesterday doing all kinds of good deeds, and the tour has moved to Memphis today.
Yes.
And so Memphis, if you see him and you see the bus, apparently it's a bus. It's a big setup. They got security. Like, if you see him rolling through Memphis, it'll look like something not ordinary, something, you know. And so, you know, show him a little love. That's apparently what he does. Folks, just watch it. I turned it on this morning. Now I'm going to say he was on the bus. Looked like he was just waking up. He's in his drawers. I turn it off. I'm a grown man. Now there's 46 million people apparently that subscribe this dude or something. Yes. Maybe it's more than that.
It's 43.9 on YouTube. I don't know what it would be.
43.9 on YouTube. This guy's big time. Now he's not of my world, but he is of some of our listeners' world, and I appreciate y'all making us aware. The tour moved here. He did something for a Nashville mother yesterday. Now I'm not saying, hey, we're looking for him to bless Memphis, but it's typically his MO, and he's here as part of his tour.
Yeah,
there you go. I just educated you after being educated by one of our great listeners.
I'm watching his stream right now. He's at a breakfast spot. I don't know which breakfast spot he is at.
He's in the M, y'all. But some of y'all might be out there right now seeing the bus and the security and him at the breakfast spot.
Yeah, I mean, this is, again,
iShowSpeed is his name.
Yeah, this is like, he's a big, you know, Ronaldo fan. He's a big, you know,
I've seen him at game, like on YouTube. My son's pulled his stuff up before.
Incredibly successful doing what he does. You know, like I said, he's probably one of the two or three biggest streamers in the game. So.
And he just takes a bunch of family members or something. They're on the bus. I saw a dude up in the bunk, and they're putting the camera on him as he's getting the sleep out of his eye. And folks, this stuff's making money.
Yes. Yes, it is. I mean, it's making.
But he's going to get out and get active, and we're actually going to have something to watch. It. So he's going to come off the bus, and we're going to start blessing people.
And we got to get him in studio. We got to get him in. We got to get him.
Now that'd have been hard, you know,
to drop by today.
This dude's major.
He is. That's
what
they
tell me.
It's good for his brand to drop by the 92.9 ESPN studios, man.
Dude,
makes him look major.
This dude just perked up like he did when he got to talk to Sean Williams yesterday. You see the perk up on iShowSpeed?
You ain't supposed to tell the people about that. This dude sat
off air. This dude sat up. Now, I'm just talking about, right, you know, we all did it. We hadn't gotten a chance to talk to Sean Williams since he's been back in Memphis.
Oh, we're getting Sean Williams
back. So, believe
me,
I was on the edge of my seat as well.
We're getting Sean Williams back in studio for the full-length, feature-length interview. Bet your ass.
Sounded like Chocolate Thunder on the mic.
He did. I'm like, what the
really
hell?
Really good.
Bro, I don't remember Sean Williams ever sounding like that. Like, he sounded like he's, like,
smooth as silk.
You know, like, Derrick Rose had that transformation, bro. Like, he you know, he didn't, like, at Memphis, he was like, with GP, right? And then he, like, you know, he comes back all these years later, he's like, hello, far out thou Memphians! And, you know, it's just amazing, bro.
He was awesome.
Like, you know, Derrick Rose basically came back sounding like Hamlet.
These kids are blessed to have him as a coach, though. I love what he was talking about yesterday.
Oh, my goodness.
Really impressive.
Can you imagine having Dad on one side of you and Sean on the other giving you tips on on making it, polishing their game?
I told Sean during the break, I was like, you got to get on Penny's staff, bro. Penny's got to bring you on because he's an NBA guy.
Yep.
It's the kind of guy that Penny, honestly, has always had on his staff. Isn't it like Sean Williams played for the Knicks? He played for the Mavs. He played for the Heat.
Long time.
You know, he knows what it takes.
Like 8 or 9.
A long career.
He might have got to 10.
Yeah.
I feel like he got 8, 9, 10.
I mean, he kind of pieced it together. You know, it wasn't like all with one team.
I know he got a couple contracts,
but he certainly did. Yeah. I mean, he played from 2006 with the Pacers, the Mavs, the Knicks, the Nets, the Lakers, the Heat, the Pistons. 2006 to 2015. I mean, again, he kind of pieced it together. You know, he didn't spend much time on one team, but like that's also the average NBA experience, by the way. Like, you know, you're not going to spend all your time with one team in the league. You're going to have to bounce around and figure it out and how to be a pro.
Didn't Thad or Mike or somebody school us that once you get to 10, you get, you know, that pension goes up significantly,
I think,
or something like that?
Yes.
Everybody's looking to get that 10.
Exactly.
It may sound like he's close to 10.
Yes.
10 seasons.
Absolutely.
Oh, but tip of the cap.
Tip of the cap to Sean Williams and tip of the cap to iShowSpeed.
Appreciate him coming to the M.
I do, actually. I think it's
show love, Memphis.
He's at Brother Juniper's. That's where he's at.
There you go, right there near the University of Memphis.
There, yeah.
Yeah. But I couldn't tell exactly. Now I'm seeing he's at Brother Juniper's. I don't even know how to get him. I don't know how to reach him.
Josh M-Town 12 is who alerted me to this today.
If somebody wants to just pull him to the side of Brother Juniper's, you know what I'm saying? Let him know, come drop by 929's studios in the next 2 to 3 hours. You know, we'll be here. Happy to have him. It'll make him look major if he goes to Memphis and he gets on the ESPN radio. Like, that's like...
Will then be on the stream.
We'll be on the stream. There's no doubt. I mean, we'll go...
So there is no turn the camera off with him.
No.
If we tell him, look, dude, turn it off.
Yes.
He's not coming.
Correct.
The camera must be on. Gotcha.
No, it's got...
That's the key to the stream.
That's part of the thing, yeah. It's like, you know, at all times.
Well, again, I'm going to have to see something other than him just walking around in the drawers on the bus. That was early this
morning.
Well,
he's dressed now.
Thank you.
I'd be curious to see... you know, where he goes today.
John's going to be watching all day. I'm glad that, brother, I appreciate our listeners who tune us into this stuff sometimes. You know, the old man, I wasn't paying no attention. I'm over there. I'm at the hospital. You know, who in the heck is I Show Speed?
Right.
I said, Jason, this is major. Just let John know. He pretty much told him, look, and now I look, see the twinkle in John's eye.
Yep.
You're going to go find this dude after the show if we haven't talked to him. I can tell.
I'm going to find him during the show, bro. What are you talking about? I just subscribed to his channel so I can chat in his... chat box to get him out.
John
here.
Is in the chat box. We're gonna get him. We're efforting now,
bro. I'm up on pop culture, bro. I can.
No, you weren't. You weren't up on this. The fact that he was coming in.
I'm up on enough. I'm up on it enough. Not every day, but I'm up on it enough to know we gotta get this guy in.
See, sometimes your old dog can still bring some things to your table, can he?
Well, part of being a parent and having a kid of. Because CJ didn't bring this to your attention. It was Josh.
No, it was one of our. Yeah, it was Josh.
It's interesting that CJ didn't bring it up.
No, I don't think. I don't think Chris knows.
That's crazy, Chris. You gotta be better, man. Because he's at that age.
That man got plenty of duties on his plate right now, starting with books.
He's on that. He's
worried about this mess.
He don't need.
I'd be more concerned, right? If we're talking about this instead of the math test he just took.
He don't need to show speed. He needs to show some B's.
That's right, but no A's.
A's. Yeah. But it doesn't rhyme.
Uh-huh.
So I had to go with the B's.
Oh, you're proud of yourself.
B's get degrees, by the way, as do D's.
If I Show Speed could see your talent level, he'd be in here and he'd be rolling the bus over here now right out from Brother Juniper's. You two guys connect, explosion.
It's just impossible.
Just explosion.
It's impossible to get through this. Look how many chats are coming through at one time, bro.
That is Brother Juniper's. I'm watching him walk out.
Yeah.
This is exciting.
It's very exciting.
He's here.
Man, he's got like a whole crowd, bro.
They said, dude, it's only going to get, oh my gosh, look at the crowd outside Brother Juniper's right now, y'all.
This is insane.
And we have some older, some 40s listening, guys like me that don't know who the heck this dude is or why it would be a big, they're right across the street, not too far down from Fox 13. I bet you they've rolled out there now. This will get bigger and bigger as the day goes on.
Bro.
Hopefully he's going to bless some Memphians too.
I didn't realize how big this dude was. Like, his security is holding people back, bro.
Y'all don't know about I Show Speed.
That is crazy. That is crazy. Man. They show love in Memphis, bro.
Again, shout out to Josh M-Town 12 for
dude, John
putting that on my
John
radar.
John Morant wouldn't get this kind of love if he was at Brother Juniper's. I'm telling you, he would not.
I mean, the word got out fast. I was looking at him a couple hours ago, and it looked like they were still on the bus.
There's a dude that got the security, and he's doing the worm behind Show Speed's car, and the security is like pinning him against the tire. I mean, this is an outrageous scene. I've never seen anything like this in my life. What are we doing, man? This is crazy. Okay, we'll take a break. Steven Ruiz is going to join us on the other side. We'll talk to him about the NFL. Big game tonight, obviously, on Thursday Night Football. Stick around. Jason and John, I'm trying to film.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
ESPN. Steven Ruiz writes about the NFL over at The Ringer, has the brilliant quarterback rankings up at The Ringer. Nice enough to join us now. Steven, what's going on, man? Appreciate the time as always.
How's it going? You're the first person to ever describe them as brilliant, I have to say. Stop. At least from what I've seen on the internet.
You keep doing them. Somebody has to think they're worth something. I mean, if they weren't, they just say, hey, Steve, man, we don't need them this week, man. You can keep them.
You know? That's a good point.
You know, and brilliance is what really defines brilliance? Is it actually being brilliant? Is it something that stokes discussion? Is it something that drives engagement? You know what I mean? There's brilliance in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
So
that's a good way to spin it. I appreciate it.
But I'm going to say this. I'm going to tell you how I define it. I define it as purely brilliant because Geno Smith. I mean, I know everybody wants to talk about Josh Allen's performance and Lamar and all. But can we have a moment for Geno Smith, number 9 in the quarterback rankings? And I thought for those people out there, Stephen, who think, yeah, you know, Geno Smith, when they hear the word associated, it's like, yeah, okay. What a reminder that was. He just put 340 on the Pats on the road. Hello. Welcome to the Las Vegas Raiders, Geno.
The thing I always say about Geno is you just have to watch. You know, you just have to watch. I know people are skeptical. They know the track record. Like you said, they remember the time with the Jets. They remember the little cameo with the Giants when Eli got benched. But when you watch him play, man, when you watch him throw a football, there's not many in the league that are better at it than him. Maybe there's 4 or 5, but you know, I don't know about the other 27 in the league. And you saw it all in New England. Like, when guys were open downfield, he was hitting them. He was putting the ball on them. He had the one interception, which wasn't really a bad decision. I would say that was probably his worst throw of the game. But other than that, he was lights out in a situation where they didn't have a run game and the pass protection wasn't the best.
We've talked about Geno and sort of what he actually is as a quarterback. And I guess the question is, the Raiders, they started the season 1-0. They were 2.5-point underdogs in this game. And, look, they play the AFC West. And you know, anytime you're talking about the fact that there's 3 teams in that division in the top 5 of the AFC power ranking, it's going to be a tough road to hoe. But what can these Raiders be if Geno is at this level? I know he had the pick, but generally he was pretty damn good. If he's at this level for the entirety of the year, what can the Raiders do?
I think they could be a competitive team, which is a lot more than you could say about this team for the past decade, maybe even 2 decades, save for the couple of years where Derek Carr got them to the playoffs. But I really think it doesn't come down to Geno to me, because I think Geno's a consistent performer. You know what you're going to get out of him. You know what you're not going to get out of him. That's a guy that can elevate guys. Like, we watch the Sunday night game with Lamar and Josh Allen. We watch Patrick Mahomes every year, and it doesn't really matter what's around them. You know that they're going to be able to raise what's around them. And Geno, for all of his strengths, he doesn't have that. I will say that he's not a creator out of structure. You know, he's not going to go outside the bounds of the offense and give you something. But as long as the protection is decent, as long as the run game is productive, which we didn't necessarily see against New England, but you're going to need it against better teams, I think this is a team that can not only be competitive, but maybe go beyond that. I'm just skeptical of the offensive line and skeptical of the running game. But if they get that on track, if Chip Kelly starts getting Ashton Jeansy some space, I can see them pushing for 10 wins.
We got a matchup tonight, obviously, of your number 10 and number 11th rate quarterbacks in Jaden Daniel and Jordan Love. I'm interested in what's the next step in terms of growth in your eyes, the next hole that he really needs to work on for Jaden Daniels, who was so good last year?
I think it's working deeper into a play. Like, I think for the first 2.5 seconds, he's going to get the ball out quick. He's going to get the ball and put it right where it needs to be for the wide receiver, one of the most accurate quarterbacks on underneath passes. But I think when you make him go to his second and third read, which is the same for all, you know, all young quarterbacks, it's not a specific criticism of Jaden Daniels. But I think that's the next step for him, because he's so good at the quick stuff and he's so good at creating once he gets outside of the pocket. Yep. It's creating within the pocket that I think separates the truly dynamic dual threat quarterbacks and the guys that are just, you know, they can make a play every once in a while, but they can't do it each and every week. So like, if he can, like, if you see him drop back, his first read's not there, and then he kind of shuffles in the pocket and hits a backside dig 15 yards down the field, that's the throw that he necessarily doesn't make all the time. And once he starts making that, I pray for defensive coordinators. I don't know how you defend him if he can hit that throw.
For Jordan on the other side of it, I mean, and he looked good in week 1, and boy, did it look like, you know, you could lean, hey, Green Bay looks great, they're a real contender, or you could lean that Detroit's taking a step back, but that looks real. I'm a Bears guy, so I've watched Green Bay. I've watched them build this team. You've added Micah Parsons. For him, is it about not doing too much? And if he plays like that the rest of the year, are they the second-best team in the NFC behind Philly?
Yeah, I think that the question of, is it like not him doing too much. I think that comes down to the offense. Like, is the offense going to provide him the structure where he doesn't feel like he has to do too much? But I agree with you. Like, I feel like that's been the problem with him where, you know, there's maybe not a throw there. There's barely a window, and he tries to fit it in. He gets burned, gets intercepted. Yep. We didn't really see that, but we didn't have to see it against Detroit because they dominated the game. But you did see a couple instances of him making tight window throws that you might call risky in other situations. So I think with him, week one was like, it kind of didn't move the needle for me. Like, I feel the same way about him that I did before week one.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see how this plays out over the course of the season.
You've got Lamar number one. You've had Lamar number one, right? I just want to make sure. Yeah. He's been number one for a long time.
Probably since, like, second half of last year, I would say.
Okay. All right. And he has not moved. I'm not saying I disagree with that. I am asking you to square how that can be true, how Lamar Jackson can be number one on any quarterback rankings, let alone the brilliance at the Ringer, and not even be really given the chance to win the game for his own team. I mean, on first and second down, they run the ball. On third down, they run a pass play that's too short of the line to gain, and then they punt it away on fourth and three. I mean, is this just coaching incompetence from the Ravens here? I mean, how do you square it all and explain it?
I guess you got to call it incompetence. I think it's like trying to win the football game the right way and trying to be like, yeah, I trust my defense and I know my defense is going to win it. But, like, it's not just that it was Lamar Jackson in that situation. It's fourth and three. I can't think of a better player outside of maybe Josh Allen for a fourth and three situation, because if it's not there through the air, like, he's going to pick it up on the ground. So, for me, I'm asking the same question as you. I still don't get it. I remember the one Sunday night game years ago when Belichick went for it on fourth and one going up against Peyton Manning, and people killed him because they didn't get it, and then Peyton obviously won the game. But if you punt it away, it's the same situation. You know what Peyton's going to do there. He's going to march down the field. He's going to get you 7 points. So I still don't get it. The best way to win that game was to win it on offense, and they just didn't do it. I don't get it.
We continue to see this pattern repeatedly from the Ravens, it feels like. Games that they should win, high-leverage situations. I mean, they were 4.5-point favorites against the Chiefs a couple years ago, and then they decided to get away from the run. Like, it just feels like in these moments, they have every sort of built-in institutional advantage between, you know, the defense and the run game and Lamar, and yet they short-circuit in these high-leverage moments. Do you trust them to not do that someday? Like, I'm just curious of your assessment of this, because it feels like, man, they should have a trophy by now, and they should probably be in the favorite right now with how down the Chiefs look at this moment. But do we really believe that they won't decombust when the moment arises?
My standing take on these matters is usually, like, just give it time. It's a small sample size. Over a larger sample size, it's all going to work out like the way you think it's going to work out. But I don't know with them. There's a lot of data showing them blowing these leads and not showing up in the big moments. And their defense has forced one turnover in the last like 12 playoff games. But you can't win football games doing that. So, like, I don't really have a good answer for you. I know, like, they have the most complete roster. I think they have the best quarterback in the NFL. They have every box checked except for actually doing the damn thing. And until they do it, like, I'm not going to be able to trust them with it.
We're 200 miles away from Nashville. We've got plenty of Titans fans listening. What are they in for this year with Cam, watching Cam Ward?
Oh, man, that was some of the most fun tape I watched this week for the quarterback rankings. I know it didn't really work out, and I know receivers didn't make plays at the catch point, but he was giving them a chance to make them, and that's my favorite type of quarterback. I got a soft spot for the gamer that's going to, you know, the big game hunter who's going to go for stuff and try to extend plays within the pocket and outside the pocket. Just a dynamic skill set. I can't wait to see him. It's all about, for me at least, I think that he has all the necessary skills. I think he has the necessary dedication to the game. It's about infrastructure. It's about putting the right pieces around him, the right coaches around him. I don't know if Tennessee has it right now, but they got the right quarterback. I'll say that.
It felt like in that Brazil game, Steven, that we had two quarterbacks. And maybe I'm making too much of it. So maybe one of these half of this is true and the other half is not true. But it felt like we had two quarterbacks who were sort of trending, maybe trading places in a way. Because Herbert played – if this was baseball, you would say that was a perfect game that he pitched. And Mahomes, granted, did make it interesting enough, but early on in that game, it just felt like he was missing throws that normally over the course of his career he always makes. And, you know, now he's down sort of, you know, his best targets. I'm just curious what you make of sort of both of those guys in this moment in their careers.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, it's about playmaking pressure to me. I think we kind of undersell how much that affects a quarterback's psyche going into a game. Like, when you are relied on to make every single play and you don't have a margin for error, if you don't make a play, you're not winning the game. Like, you're going to miss a few throws. You're going to press and you're going to throw into coverage. When you're, you know, just throwing to wide open wide receivers and you got nothing going on in the pocket and everything's easy, like, you have the largest margin for error possible, you could skip out on some risky throws. And I think that's exactly what you saw in Brazil, is like, Justin Herbert had been living that life that Patrick Mahomes is just starting to get used to, with like a suspect offensive line and no weapons. And you can see how that unburdens a quarterback with Justin Herbert. He looked like a different quarterback. I don't think you're reading too much into it. Like, you saw him play a little looser. He was quicker to scramble. I think that was the big thing, and that's been a big criticism of him, is not enough artistry in his game. But we saw it, and we saw him close out the game, and he put a little stank on that fly, too.
He did. He did. I mean, he's out there like Mike Vick. Like, what the hell? What kind of offseason program was this dude, working under? And then, like, for the Chiefs side of it, I just, like, you know, I've been on the NFL a lot, and one of the sort of foundational truths that I have about the NFL is that if the Chiefs are ever in a game where they're giving a point or getting a point, anything under three, one way or the other, like, I'm just going to bet the Chiefs, and I'm going to live with that philosophically. However, what I saw on Friday was disturbing in some ways, like, defensively specifically. We've seen the Chiefs' offense struggle. I mean, it was an effort all year last year. But to see the defense kind of repeatedly fail in these high leverage, like, usually that's where Spags has been absolutely fantastic.
Right.
So just from a trajectory standpoint, are we seeing a slide? Is this the beginning of a slide in Kansas City in your mind?
Yeah, because people say, like, winning covers up everything, and I think that was the case. It went 15-2, but if you watch those games, they looked a lot like what we saw on Friday. It's just that they were on the right end of the result, right? And I want to give them the benefit of the doubt because they were playing the freaking Terminator at quarterback on Friday, but it's the same problems we saw last year, giving up the explosive plays, not being able to, you know, get offenses off the field on third down. That's where they really had their problem, which, like you said, in the past, their pass defense, you could always bank on it. It was a run defense that was the concern. It's kind of flipped. The script has kind of flipped. And in this NFL, you want a good pass defense. Anybody can stop the run just by committing numbers. And I think that's why they've gotten exposed a little bit, especially on defense. Like, you saw it in the Super Bowl. I don't think they would have won that Super Bowl no matter what the defense did, just because of, you know, how the offense played and how the offensive line protected. But that's a vulnerable defense.
All right. You got to school me, Steven, on my quarterback, Caleb Williams. There's a ton here. Right. I'll frame it this way. You know, you watch Ben Johnson coach him, and he starts 10 of 10. He's checking down stuff. You know, he's getting it out quickly, like we've all Bears fans have been hoping for. And then as you go on, you know, and while it might have been limiting, it was working. You scored on your first drive and everything else. As you go on, it starts to erode, and he starts reverting back to the old Caleb. You know, the intentional grounding, the stepping out of bounds, and it totally seems off the plan of completions. So my question to you is, can Ben coach that out of him? Can you get him to stay on script for four quarters, or are we just watching a guy that's – I love the way you put it here. He knows all the dance steps, but he can't stay on beat. He can't stay on script. What do you think?
No, yeah. Well, I think first and foremost, it's on Ben Johnson to figure out how to be able to run the football. Like, even when you saw him checking it down early in that game, he was – because when you can run the football, the defense can't pin their ears back, the defensive line, and rush the pass.
Absolutely.
They don't get in pass rush mode. Yeah. They're not watching the ball get snapped. They're watching their keys, their offensive linemen. Totally changes how they rush the passer. And I thought the Vikings could just pin their ears back after a while, and they were really getting after him. But even early on, he was moving before those checkdowns. It wasn't like they were, like, checkdowns in rhythm. He had an evaded rusher. Like, I remember the first one where he kind of looks to his left, and DeAndre Swift's, like, 15 yards beyond the line of scrimmage, and he's like, what the hell's going on here? And he has to wait it out and kind of buy time to hit it. That was the case for a lot of those plays, and he was extending a lot of plays, the third down pass on the sideline that everyone was going crazy about. The early stuff that was working wasn't, like, within structure of the offense. It's not like the offense was giving him those layups. He was creating them himself. And when you ask a quarterback to do that, especially a 22-year-old quarterback, 23 years old, against a Brian Flores defense, the dam's going to break eventually, and the dam broke. And I just think it's on the offensive line and the running game to kind of keep them in that mode. I do agree. Like, my concern more so than the pocket stuff and playing on time was the misses, which has been the case going back to last year. If you read my blurb in the rankings, the wild misses downfield, that's the main problem for me.
No question.
And if he hits on those three throws, like, I think we're talking about this game totally different from his perspective.
All right, a couple more. We're talking to Stephen Ruiz from The Ringer. Great Appreciate stuff. Your time as always, man.
Yes.
Which quarterback's hive is, like, the most dedicated? Like, they're on, they're like on you every week about, you know, he's not high enough, your disrespect. Like, whose hive in the league is the strongest that you hear from week to week?
Okay, so it evolves. It was definitely the Tua Dolphins fans 2 years ago, but they've gone quiet.
They're silent. Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, all right, you were right, you got that. They won't ever admit it, but. And then it was the 49ers fans. I think that kind of leveled off with Brock Purdy, where how he's kind of like, you know, he's kind of settled off over the last couple of years. But the new one is going to be J.J. McCarthy. I could tell just based off yesterday. Like, they are after
well,
me. After
you dropped him, man. You dropped him at 32 after that performance. You dropped him three spots.
It was awful early.
You said after that performance, like, the performance was good. Like, he made four throws in the fourth quarter. I give him credit for that. But I don't rank quarterbacks based on moxie or whatever right. You want to rank them. Maybe that's a flaw in the rankings, but I will say this about the methodology with the rankings. He didn't really drop. Guys leaped above him. Like Cam Ward, I liked what I saw out of Cam Ward more than I liked what I saw out of J.J. McCarthy. Spencer Rattler, I know nobody watched the Saints and Cardinals game, but go watch that game. The guy was impressive. So I think Vikings fans are just a little upset that I've put Rattler and Cam Ward ahead of him.
Okay, right now. I will, again, these are your rankings, not mine. But moxie is a thing. Like, leadership is a thing. I mean, I one of the points I made, I'm sure you heard it too, was that when the Vikings were down 7-0, you got Kevin O'Connell on the sidelines, and usually you hear these coaches kind of hedge, like, yeah, you know, we got to be better, you know, we're gonna get him in the right spots, you know. He was like, nah, JJ's fine, we're gonna go score. You know, it's like the Hasselbeck winning the coin toss. I've never heard a coach sound that confident, a guy making his first start, but like, it just feels like he's got that contagious ability, and so. I feel like that's going to be a part of him. You know,
Let me say this about the comeback. They had a 50-50 run-pass balance in terms of play calling, and they're coming back from a double-digit lead in the second half. Like, that doesn't tell me that the coach is like, all right, we're putting on J.J. to win. They started being able to run the football in the second half. Jordan Mason came in and started ripping off 9-yard runs, and that's what changed the game. Like, look at the game as a whole. The Bears couldn't run the football at all. The Vikings couldn't run the football for the first three quarters. They figured out how to run the football. Then their offense became viable. The Bears' offense was only viable because of what Caleb Williams was doing. So, like, that's the difference between how I look at that game and how I, you know, assess. Moxie is like, I do agree, it matters. It matters. And I think there are rankings that kind of overweight it, and then you end up with, like, yep. Jalen Hurts as your third best quarterback.
That's what I called him, the white Jalen Hurts on the show. I'm like, that's what he's going to be, man.
there's no perfect way to rank quarterbacks, no matter, especially if you have like a consistent methodology and you're beholden to it. Like, I can't change the formula of how I do it. So I don't know what to do. I don't know how to square that.
No, it's good stuff, man. And it's always a pleasure to catch up on the show, brother. Appreciate the
Thank
time
you
as
this,
always, Stephen. Thanks.
Great stuff.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Yep. Yes, sir. He is Stephen Ruiz from The Ringer, the quarterback ranker, and always do appreciate his time here on the show. I love his stuff, man. I think that's two. That's got to be two for two from you.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he's good. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
I love looking at it through the prism of the quarterback.
Well, and like the rankings are really cool in terms of like the way they've presented them. Like, you can click the timeline on each quarterback to see where they're ranked. You know, week one, week two, week three. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? It'll evolve. You know, Stephen Ruiz is actually a big college basketball fan. That's how we connected. I don't know if I told you how, but he's a big Maryland basketball fan, and he was watching Field of 68, and he followed me, and I was like, oh my God, this guy got from a Ringer. Let me hit him back. So this is how it, you know, this is how it kind of evolves.
It's the Jalen Hurts being 13, and I know why.
Right.
Because this rates skill level, like he said, we ain't rating moxie or leadership.
Exactly.
I just talked about that with McCarthy.
Yep.
I mean, the guy has played well in two Super Bowls.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you do it, when you play well, shouldn't that matters?
But it's like you know, I guess from
But he is slow. His process is slow. That's part of what has him down here at
exactly.
13. He explains his weaknesses, and they're all true.
Yes.
And somewhere in there, I guess winning. would be, you know, in winning moments, winning plays.
I mean, you kind of have to make a choice, right? When you set out to do it, you have to like decide, all right, am I taking into account?
Yeah, you set that, yeah.
You know, what, you know, whatever it may be. Is it just about pure passer skills, you know, or is it about the whole picture?
And if it's pure passer skills, I mean, Lamar's great. His numbers are great, but if we call him a pure passer?
Yeah. Or whatever it is. Like, I mean, yeah,
he's number one, is what I'm saying.
The package, by the way, as we speak, Isho Speed is meeting with Paul Young. He's downtown.
I'm gonna sniff out the big story of the day.
That's right, man.
I don't care how old I get.
That's right.
Thanks to my people.
I mean, you come to Memphis, man. We want to show you some love, man. Come on, Dad, 92.9 Show Speed, man. We got you, man. We're gonna look. We can get you on that mic over there. We'll take the cover off. It kind of stinks, but
get him a new cover, please.
But man, he'll have a great time, man. There's no doubt about that. You can have that shirt right there. Can we give him that shirt, Brad? We'll give him that shirt.
I wonder if Paul Young found out about Isho Speed coming on the J&J show.
I think he did.
There's a chance of that.
I mean, you know what? We got to get Paul Young on the J&J show. I mean,
that's doable.
I mean, we got to do that. We got to help him with the negotiations of the FedEx Forum.
No, I don't think he needs our help.
I got some ideas, man. You know, I'm just going to pitch them to him. But this shows me just dapping up the mayor of Memphis. It's just too funny, man. This is so, like, he's got to be like, this is the Memphis mayor? No way. It's so good.
I'm glad you're entertained.
I am entertained. I'm watching it happen. It's very entertaining. He's down there, just dapping up Paul Young, bro. It's good stuff.
You got to, put it on the 92.9 line.
That's right.
You know.
There you go.
Then maybe we'll have him come on through.
There you go. All right, we'll come back with the rundown. Stick around. Jason and John, how do you try to FM ESPN?
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know
the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.